Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Jackson Hewitt.
I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. It's happened again. A deadly mass shooting, this time at a Sweet 16 party last night in Dadeville, Alabama, northeast of Montgomery. Tallapoosa County Commissioner Emma Jean Thwett tells CBS News.
EMA director called me and told me that it was a mass shooting and four were confirmed dead and probably 20 or 30 injured.
The shooting happened at a dance studio, and there's been another mass shooting in Louisville, Kentucky. Two people were killed last night when someone fired into a crowd of hundreds of people who'd gathered at a park. Mayor Craig Greenberg.
This has been an unspeakable week of tragedy for our city.
Four people were wounded. Police have no suspects. On Monday, five people were shot and killed at a bank in downtown Louisville by an employee. Police in Farmington, New Mexico have released body cam footage of officers shooting a homeowner after they showed up to the wrong address in response to a domestic violence call. Details from CBS's Michael George.
Someone on the call clearly states the address.
5308 Valley View.
But Farmington officers go to 5305 Valley View instead. Body camera footage shows the officers question whether they're at the right home.
Don't tell me I'm wrong.
Seconds later, the homeowner opens the door.
Hey, heads up!
Farmington police say all three officers opened fire, killing 52-year-old Robert Dotson.
Hundreds of abortion rights supporters marched in downtown Los Angeles yesterday. They're angry about a ruling by a federal judge in Texas that could ban the use of an abortion pill. KCBS TV reporter Jeff Nguyen was there.
Mifepristone has been approved for use to end pregnancy for more than 20 years, but groups have challenged the Food and Drug Administration's handling of the drug's approval.
It's not about abortion. It's about control of women's bodies.
45% of women earn as much or more than their husbands. But a Pew survey shows that women married to men are still picking up most household responsibilities. CBS News Money Watch reporter Amy Pitchy says that is hurting women financially.
A lot of women feel they maybe aren't able to reach their earnings or professional potential because they have all these duties at home.
Well, you can get books, movies, even tools at libraries in the U.S., but this might be a first, gun locks, and you don't have to return them. Anne Arundel County, Maryland libraries have 4,500 locks to give away. They were bought using a grant from the state. Anyone 18 or older can get up to two of them. No questions asked. This is CBS News.
Taxes are due. Have you filed yet? Don't worry. Jackson Hewitt is racking up the assists. They will get you filed or an extension before the deadline. Beat the crowds by going to Jackson Hewitt.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Watts, your personal injury attorneys dedicated to helping you get the justice you deserve. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Collada of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy-efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Wachs, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Wachs, GTWLawyers.com.
News brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, your personal injury attorneys with over 35 years of experience. GTWLawyers.com. They're all in to win.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, April 15th, 2023. This is our 43rd broadcast since going on the air here on the networks of Civic Media here in Waukesha and throughout the state of Wisconsin. Delighted to be with you once again on this wonderful Saturday morning in Wisconsin for this broadcast of Morning Cannolis, again, a production of Civic Media. This is our weekly review, our analysis, and our discussion of those very most important news stories that happen every week. They happen in law, in government, and in the aspiration for justice in America, which we all want to pursue. We're coming to you again from the studios of WAUK Radio, but broadcasting throughout our state. And I'm joined in the studio this morning by my ever faithful and wonderful producer, Anya. And together we're going to be talking with you this morning once again about the significant stories in our lives and our livelihoods from this past week, and also looking forward to the future. We have a very special program with you and for you today, and that is because we're going to be reinitiating a program, an initiative, a segment that we began about a couple of weeks ago called Undiscovered Justice. We're going to be highlighting something in our lives, something that's happening at the time of our broadcast, before or after, that also reveals something significant about the rule of law, sometimes government, sometimes about the way in which we respond. A couple of weeks ago, we talked at great length about what was going on in Israel and continues to go on in Israel in connection with opposition, strong opposition, opposition that shut down the nation when the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, announced some very serious reductions, some diminutions, some attacks upon the independence of the Iraqi judiciary. The people in Israel, millions of them, took to the streets, shut down commerce, shut down education, shut down medical services to protest their view that what the government of Benjamin Netanyahu was doing was contrary to the best interests of the nation, contrary to the fundamental notions that animate all good republics, that is the rule of law and an independent judiciary that is not beholden and subject to the oversight and limitations imposed by another branch. Instead, balances and checks, as we always think about them under our own Constitution. Today, we're going to talk a little bit more about something both in the past and in the immediate present, and that is matters going on with respect to our sick population in Wisconsin, throughout the nation, and also throughout the world, because yesterday, Friday, April 14th, was Vaisakhi. I'm going to talk about the reasons why that's so very significant here in Wisconsin and throughout our world. Talk a little bit about where that holiday comes from, why it's meaningful, both spiritually and religiously for members of our sick communities, but also talk about the celebration and the good things that the Sikh community here in Wisconsin and throughout our nation have done, even in the wake of the horrific tragedy of August 5th, 2012, that claimed the lives of seven of our fellow men and women and that injured many, many beyond that. We're going to talk a little bit about that story too, but mostly a celebration of Vaisakhi as a portion of our salute to justice and undiscovered stories out there. As always, we're also going to attack and undertake an analysis of those other big stories. That includes, of course, some updates from just last week, the fallout, the litigation fallout, what followed the arraignment of the first president in our history to be indicted criminally by any jurisdiction. This one, of course, coming out of Manhattan, the DA Alvin Bragg there charging the former president Donald Trump with violations of financial laws, specifically related to tax and also election matters and bringing those misdemeanors into the felony world. We talked about that at great length last week and the consequences of that particular indictment returned by a grand jury in Manhattan. Talked about the likely passage of time, what's going to happen in the next weeks and months and maybe even years as that matter goes forward. This week, I'm going to talk with you about four different matters, at least two of which derive directly from that big news item from last week, also involving Donald Trump, also involving this particular allegation, this package of allegations against him for fraud, a couple of other lawsuits that are not directly related to that, but also have to do with our former president and the civil involvement that he also has in many cases throughout our nation. Needless to say, we're going to pick up and do some updates as well in the area of mifepristone, this drug that has been the subject of both decisions by two federal courts in the Eastern District of Washington and the Northern District of Texas, by a major ruling that followed those initial trial court rulings coming out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and then just late yesterday afternoon, some major decision by the United States Supreme Court and Justice Alito in particular that puts all of that on hold, at least for a time. We're going to talk about that, the reason why that particular action by our highest court is very important and what we can likewise anticipate in the future. Finally, in our second hour, also talking about the announcement just this past week, including the arraignment of Thursday of this past week of Jack Teixeira, who is this young man who is charged by the federal government with having violated our national security laws in releasing online information, documents, information that's related to the war in Ukraine, and effectively, according to many people, compromising some information, some secrets that should not have been out in the public domain with respect to the war effort there, the connections between our nation and the nation of Ukraine. He has now been charged. We'll talk about what he's been charged with, what we can anticipate there. And finally, we've also got a big lawsuit starting next week. This is the Dominion's voting machines case against Fox News, talking about some specific things that the judge who's presiding over that case announced just this past week. They're going to have an impact upon the trial beginning in a couple of short days. And then we'll talk more generally about what the nature of that case, that trial, is going to be all about, invoking once again the notion of actual malice, which is the keystone. It's sort of the signal information piece given to the jury that for their determination about whether or not Fox acted with actual malice, a phrase coming from New York Times versus Sullivan, this major case in the area of First Amendment rights. We'll talk about what that means and what all of that portends for that Fox and Dominion news case coming up this coming week. And beyond, quite certainly as well. To begin, however, let's talk again about undiscovered justice. Undiscovered justice. We all recall well that on August 5th of 2012, a mass shooting took place at the Gurdwara, the Sikh temple. The Gurdwara is the name of the religious location, the place of worship for members of the Sikh faith. This happened in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, right down the street from where at that time I was serving as the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. A 40-year-old shooter attacked the Sikh population there in Oak Creek. He shot many, many people. He shot seven people altogether. Six died immediately. A seventh died a couple of years after that of injuries, undeniably, as a result of that particular shooting. And we know that in the wake of that shooting, the shooter himself committed suicide in the parking lot of that Gurdwara in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Undeniably, as a result of the investigation that followed, we learned that shooter was an American white supremacist, an Army veteran who came from Cudahy, Wisconsin, and a person who is probably his perfect cocktail, if you will, of someone who has been on the outs, if you will, from the major institutions and support mechanisms of all of our lives. His family had put him behind them. He had recently broken up with a girlfriend here in the greater Milwaukee area. The association, this white supremacist association, which was embracing him and with which he claimed alliance, came to him and basically disowned him. So all of his support mechanisms falling away, and that in combination with this fundamental view that he undeniably had that the other, people who do not look like him, people who do not act like him perhaps, and perhaps worship in a way that's different from him, that somehow those people are standing in the way of your success, your movement forward, a completely unfounded and condemnable position in life. He takes a gun and he goes into that Gurdwara on a bright Sunday morning, August 5th, 2012, and wreaks havoc. He engages also in some fights with people in the parking lot, probably almost certainly the leader, the president of the Gurdwara at the time, Satman Singh Kaleka. His sons go on to be advocates not only for anti-violence initiatives, but also for a greater understanding of the Sikh faith generally. And so it was in that setting that I first became intimately aware of and began a wonderful association that continues to this very time with the great Sikh faiths of our nation and our state. There's a Gurdwara, again, not only in Oak Creek, but also in Brookfield, where I live, and I have been greatly honored to be a part of their community, sharing in some of their events, and certainly sharing in the celebration of Vaisakhi, which, again, technically, and in terms of calendar dates, celebrated yesterday on the 14th, typically on the 13th or 14th of April of every year. This Sunday, the Gurdwaras around our world are going to be celebrating Vaisakhi as this major holiday in the history and the lifeblood of the Sikh faith. And so at the Oak Creek Gurdwara, at the Brookfield Gurdwara, all of the Gurdwaras throughout the nation, a time of community, of coming together to talk about the reason for community and the notion that even in the wake of this horrific disaster of many years ago, we should not only learn from it, never forget it, never put it behind us completely, but embrace the humanity that the Sikh community embraced immediately, even in the midst of this great tragedy. So let's talk a little bit about what Vaisakhi is. Vaisakhi, often spelled V-A-I-S-A-K-H-I, sometimes with a B instead of a V, depending upon the translation, one of the most significant, widely observed annual celebrations for Sikhs, S-I-K-H-S, adherence to Sikhism, the fifth largest major world religion, fifth largest on the face of our planet, Sikhism. Sikhism today is, again, our major religion in our nation, too. And 300 years ago, this was a pivotal time in the development of the Sikh faith as well. That's when they honored this pivotal moment in the evolution of the religion, when the 10th in line of the gurus, or the spiritual leaders, unified the Sikhs and formally brought to fruition and articulation many aspects of that faith. Many people say in the wake of that Vaisakhi, this celebration, presents an opportunity to reflect on the journey as a Sikh and to reaffirm commitments to the values that we all hold dear. When we come back, more about Vaisakhi, Sikhism, as a part of our celebration of undiscovered justice here on Morning Cannolis.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast this afternoon with scattered thunderstorms likely. Daytime highs approaching 61. Westerly winds 10 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast again tonight. Mixed precipitation likely. Lows dip down to about 30. Snow likely tomorrow. High of 37. Overcast skies. About an inch of snow tonight through tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 48 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
Welcome back to this, our second segment in this special production, this special episode of Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me on this Saturday morning. We're talking this morning to begin our discussion about Vaisakhi, this major holiday being observed yesterday and today and tomorrow by Sikhs nationwide and certainly right here in the state of Wisconsin. When is Vaisakhi? Again, traditionally, it is the 13th or 14th of April. Typically marks the first month of the Sikh calendar. And again, this year happens to fall on a Friday yesterday. But again, this weekend, Sikh congregations throughout the world going to be celebrating, commemorating Vaisakhi on Sunday. Bills introduced in Congress to designate April 14th as National Sikh Day to honor and celebrate the important role played by the Sikh community in the United States historically and to this time. Very traditional to say Happy Vaisakhi. Which means best wishes, of course, to members of the Sikh faith and to all of us. What is the history of Vaisakhi? Where does this come from and why is it this major holiday in the lives of our Sikh colleagues and friends, men and women, boys and girls? Well, in 1469, way back in 1469, middle of the 15th century, a small boy named Nanak was born in the Punjab region of South Asia, where the predominant religions at that time were Islam and Hinduism. Nanak founded a new and independent religion, Sikhi or Sikhism, and became the first guru, the first leader of this new faith that he was founding. 1699, a couple of centuries later, as again I made reference to this before the break, another guru, another one of the leaders in the long history of Sikhism, Guru Gobind Singh, chose the harvest festival of Vaisakhi to start what is known as the Khalsa. The Khalsa, K-H-A-L-S-I-A. It's the notion that Sikhs come together around certain principles, common of many religions, many faiths, if not all of them, teaching Sikhs how to live the principles of Sikhism. That's the Khalsa, including things like remembrance of God, truthful living, and adherence to and an exaltation of the truth of real facts, a huge, huge focus on service to humanity, seva is what it is called, and that too has animated the Sikh faith and the Sikh members of the congregations ever since their lifestyle and their religion began many, many years ago, standing up to tyranny and injustice, also a part of the fundamental tenets of the Khalsa, begun way back in 1699. We know that this happens to fall at the same time that Christians, about the same time, have been celebrating Easter in the wake of that celebration of just last Sunday. Passover recently celebrated by our Jewish colleagues and friends, boys and girls, men and women. And of course, Ramadan still going and coming up soon to an Eid al-Fitr coming up, which marks the end of Ramadan. All of these great religions in the world recognizing, celebrating important times in their faith. Up until this time, Sikhism was a philosophy, a collection of scriptures and set practices. And when the Khalsa was established, ultimately in 1699, it unified and solidified Sikhism into what is today called a collective faith and a religion, and brought the religion together. And again, it became one of the major religions on the face of the planet. It was also important at the time, that is the creation by Nanak, the formulation of the Khalsa a couple of hundred years later. Also important because what was happening politically, socially in northern India at that time. Sikhs and people from other backgrounds were facing religious persecution and also unjust treatment by other people who were plainly not Sikhs, people who were even inside of government. And with the establishment of the Khalsa, the Sikhs were more organized, better prepared to fight for their religious freedom and oppose the corruption that unfortunately was being visited upon them. I mentioned before that there are a series of Sikh gurus in the Sikh history, 10 altogether. The last of them, the book of the Sikh faith, the Guru Granth Sahib, which is always on display and always used as a part of their services. You can see that too if you go to the Gurdwaras this coming Sunday. Their holy book, the Guru Granth Sahib. Sikhs have developed, of course, an outward appearance. And it was on Vaisakhi that the initiated Sikhs were given this visible identity, frankly, at that time as a mandatory and formal requirement. And the identity, again, under the Khalsa, under the traditions of Sikhism that had been started a couple of hundred years before, Sikhs were meant to stand out and be called upon. Why? For their help, for their assistance. This concept of seva, service, always, always animated what members of the Sikh faith have been all about. The identity comprised of five different religious symbols, and you will see these when you go to the Gurdwaras around the nation and around our state. They're known as the five Ks. They're worn by Sikhs who are adherents to the fundamentals of the faith. The Kesh is called uncut hair, and that symbolizes spirituality, right? The Kanga, K-A-N-G-A, it's a wooden comb signifying cleanliness. There's the kachera, a cotton shorts signifying modesty and self-discipline, also a part of the fundamental beliefs of all Sikhs. The kara, which is a steel bracelet worn on the dominant hand as a reminder to do good deeds. And I will tell you that one of the great honors that I had from the members of the Sikh faiths in southeastern Wisconsin was to be given a kara many years ago, which I still wear on occasion, not only when I'm appearing and present for their wonderful services there, but for other events in my own life on a regular basis. And finally, the kirpan, a small sword that is a reminder to stand up for those in need, to work toward justice, work toward a fundamental notion of the rule of law. So all of those things, all of those important to the celebration of Vaisakhi. Sikhs celebrate this by visiting, of course, their local Gurdwara to worship, to meditate, to partake in langar, which is a free community meal you can get fed at virtually any time that you go to one of the Sikh Gurdwaras. It's a meal prepared and served by all Gurdwaras, by volunteers. Again, this sense of welcoming to support the community of all men and women. And the notion that when you come together, not only do you come together to worship and to be a part of that community, but we're going to feed you. We're going to keep you well. We're going to keep you healthy. And many Sikhs have said that their favorite aspect and the favorite thing that they enjoy about Vaisakhi is just this notion of being with family and friends and community to meditate and sing in the gratitude of the creation of this faith. And so all of that being celebrated by more than 25 million Sikhs worldwide right now, this weekend, most living in the Punjab region, but also, according to very reliable estimates, about 500,000 Sikhs in the United States, populations around the country, including right here in Wisconsin. Celebrate with all of us, Vaisakhi, this coming weekend, joyful in that celebration of life and livelihood. As we come back, more about the basic news stories, important news stories, animating our lives right here in Wisconsin and throughout our nation.
Love me do.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Four people were shot and killed at a party in Dadeville, Alabama yesterday. Many more were injured. There's been another mass shooting in Louisville, Kentucky. Two people were killed, four wounded in a shooting last night. Deputy Police Chief Paul Humphrey.
Hundreds of people were in the park at the time of the shooting when someone started shooting into the crowd.
We're now seeing police body cam footage of officers killing a homeowner in New Mexico after they went to the wrong address, says CBS's Michael George.
His teenage daughter called 911, likely not realizing her dad was shot by officers themselves.
There were gunshots in the house and my dad was shot.
Vice President Kamala Harris was at a rally in Los Angeles yesterday, along with hundreds of people protesting a federal judge's move to ban a widely used abortion pill.
You can gauge the strength of a democracy based on the strength of women in that democracy.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Walks, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson and Walks. GTWLawyers.com.
Hi, this is Lindsay Kynard at 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK The Shaw. Here are upcoming events happening in the area. Come celebrate 414 Day this Friday, April 14th, with various exciting events and activities throughout downtown Milwaukee. Take part in shuffleboard or axe throwing at the North Shore Club at 230 East Pittsburgh Avenue in Walker's Point, which is presented by Bars and Recreation. Love to sing? Well, come sing your heart out at Amped, located at 910 West Juneau Avenue, and take advantage of special 414 Day pricing for karaoke. And finally, don't forget to visit the Milwaukee Admirals this weekend to celebrate our great city at the UW-Milwaukee Panthers Arena, where the Admirals play the Chicago Wolves starting at 7 p.m. If you have an event you'd like us to share, let me know. Email me, Lindsay Kiner, at info@civicmedia.us.
Direct from the Dairy State, it's Extra Sharp Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. Enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn block. Extra Sharp Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media Station or on the app.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Devil's Advocates.
Hey, Jenny.
It's up to all of us. It's not just up to Democrats. Are we ready to rid our country of this perversion and deception? You know, are we sick of massacres at churches, grocery stores, theaters, concerts? Are we sick of adults forcing children who are raped into pregnancy? When is enough enough that we're going to vote out those fascists?
I'm putting you down for Caller Hall of Fame today. We have to carry these messages, even if the Democratic Party is incapable. You keep it up, sister.
Follow The Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Not just anybody. Help. You know I need someone.
Help. We are back. This is Saturday, April 15th, 2023. This is our annual, our weekly review, and also annual review as we come to the anniversary of our 1 year on the broadcast of stations of civic media. We're going to be talking a lot about things we've accomplished in this past year. Today, we're talking specifically about some unsung and undiscovered justice out there. Right before the break, talking all about Vaisakhi. Before we move on to the major news stories that also animate our discussion this morning, I want to specifically acknowledge once again the deaths that were suffered by the Sikh community. The individuals killed at the time of the attack on the Gurdwara in Oak Creek, August 5th, 2012, Satwan Kaleka, Paramjeet Kaur, Prakash Singh, Sita Singh, Ranjit Singh, Suveg Singh, and Punjab Singh. They all knew about Sikhism plainly. That was their faith. That was their religion. And each of them brought animation and life to all of the things we talked about before the break. And it is significant, the reason why I'm highlighting Vaisakhi and the losses, but also the lives that continue there at the Sikh Gurdwaras in the category of undiscovered justice, is because of the things that have happened with and through and by the Sikh faith as a result of that horrific event. They have turned it around into a justice-promoting notion, a justice-promoting concept. And because of the deaths suffered at that time, some significant things happened. Those deaths were not in vain. Obviously, we would much prefer to have all of those people alive, but their deaths, the sacrifices they made at the time, promoted justice in our world, promoted a greater understanding and an appreciation for the rule of law. Because they died, today, our nation's local, state, and federal law enforcement officers measure and record hate crimes with a greater precision that promotes safety and security and well-being for all of us. As a result of their actions, the actions of all Sikhs in the wake of those deaths, our places of adult and youth learning and education and growth in nearly half the states of our union, almost half of them, are now increasingly effectively defining and describing and embracing and telling more complete stories about this great world religion. That's going on today in the wake of what happened on August 5th of 2012. Movements forward in 2022, 2023 here in Wisconsin and throughout our nation, including our Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, providing teachers of our state with the intellectual foundation and some instructional materials to make learning about Sikhism a greater reality. The collection of Sikh materials on Sikh studies, fiction, nonfiction, that was developed about a year or so ago, now accessible and alive at the Oak Creek Public Library, believed to be one of the great collections, the largest collections, public collections of Sikh materials and Sikh studies in the nation. That also available to you through the Milwaukee Public Library system at the Oak Creek facility. We know as well that employers and landlords and military leaders and healthcare providers, bankers have greater commitments because of what happened, because of the commitment of the Sikh community after the tragedy there on August 5th, greater commitment to the concept of equality and equity and due process and fairness for all people, including those of the Sikh faith. The angry and ugly voices of hate and the terrible acts of inhumanity that unfortunately have been here in Wisconsin and every state of the union are now rightly targeted for condemnation and are pursued by responsible, enlightened people, both within our government and without our government, governments of localities, governments of states, our national government, and this renewed commitment to ensure that the words and the deeds of disaffection and separation, the kinds of messages conveyed by the shooter on August 5th, messages of hate and anger, that those kinds of things are vanquished and they're relegated to the dung heap of human history. All of that happening in the wake of that horrific event. Undiscovered justice this morning on Morning Cannolis, revealed this weekend and every weekend, every day of the week by the Sikh faith. This weekend, celebrating Vaisakhi at the local Gurdwaras. This week, as I mentioned, also a time of great additional litigation, both criminal and civil, throughout our nation. As always, we're going to spend some time this morning in our segment in this first hour and also in the next hour as well. It's an ambitious but achievable syllabus, hopefully informative, inspiring, also again, traditionally, and again this morning, asking the questions, what happened? What do we know? What are the facts of a particular event? What makes them important? Why is it significant that we know about those things? And what, if anything, should we do in response to what we know? Let's begin with one of the news stories that continues to animate the newspapers and the electronic media around our country, and that is having to do with the abortion and a very significant drug when it comes also to miscarriages, mifepristone. We've talked about this a lot in recent weeks and recent days. We continue to talk about it because of the significance of it, not only in terms of the privacy rights that are being the subject of lots and lots of focus by our United States Supreme Court, but because of the access to abortion that continues to be an aspiration for justice by many, many people in our nation. We know that in the past couple of weeks, there have been, frankly, about 8 days or so ago, we had decisions by two federal judges, one of them in Eastern Washington, one of them in Northern Texas, basically to completely different ends. The Judge Kaczmarek in the Northern District of Texas found for the first time in our nation's history, the first time that a federal judge took it upon himself to overrule, if you will, the longstanding decision of the Food and Drug Administration. The Food and Drug Administration that had for about a quarter century been doing testing and analysis and had determined that mifepristone, when it comes to abortion services and also miscarriages, was safe, not without completely safe, but certainly in the kind of thing that one can rely on. And for that reason, enabling people across our nation, women in particular, to get access to this all-important drug. And for 23 years, that has been the law of the land as a result of what the Food and Drug Administration has done to put its imprimatur on this drug. We know that, again, about 8 days ago, a little bit more than a week or so ago, Judge Kaczmarek in Texas disagreed with that, took it up upon himself to review all of the relevant information, principally in the nature of all of the records from the FDA that supported the safety and security of this drug, and also, as his order indicated, seizing upon some widely discredited reports about how mifepristone is perhaps not safe and not secure, reports that, again, the mainstream medical community has pretty much disregarded. And as a result of his unilateral finding a week ago, Judge Kaczmarek said that the Food and Drug Administration has to withdraw authorization for the use of this drug. And he ordered it to happen nationwide. Of course, as I indicated before, all of this in the wake of the decision by the United States Supreme Court in June of last year, finding that there's no longer a privacy right under the Constitution to abortion and leaving the decision now to all the states, resulting in precisely the patchwork that we anticipated would happen when that decision came out. This event just this past week, the decision out of the Northern District of Texas, plainly deriving directly from that decision in Dobbs, focusing in particular upon a medication used to accomplish abortion, and the judge once again finding that the FDA's sanctioning of that, putting their imprimatur on that, was not valid, basically substituting, for the first time in the history of our nation, a federal judge substituting his or her own judgment for the better judgment and the experience-based conclusions of medical people, healthcare providers, who have looked at this and examined this with great detail for a quarter century. At the same time, as indicated, a judge in the Eastern District of Washington doing just the opposite, granting the requests of about 17 attorneys general, and that from the District of Columbia, who had asked him to make a finding, make a directive to the FDA, that the FDA not in any way pull that drug from common use and accessibility. And so we had for about a week or so these competing decisions by judges in Texas and in Washington. And the question was, what was going to happen there? Well, we know, for example, that in the wake of those decisions, that one of the things that happened was that the U.S. Department of Justice decided to intervene, and indeed they did. At the direction of the Attorney General, his name is Merrick Garland, they went in and they petitioned the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. That's the circuit that is responsible for, among other federal districts, the districts in Texas, including Northern Texas. They went in to the Fifth Circuit and said, "We are petitioning judges of the Fifth Circuit, this higher tribunal. We're asking you to overturn what the lower court judge did. We're asking you to revisit that and tell him that he was wrong about that, and that the world should be restored to the way it was." Well, we did get, in just the past couple of days, a ruling out of the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, again, in the southern part of our nation. And this, of course, again, happens a year after the Supreme Court declared it was ending the matter of abortion under the Constitution.
And that's what all of this derives from. The appellate ruling from the Fifth Circuit, a divided three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals there, said that the pill mifepristone could, in fact, remain available. And that certainly was a victory for those people, all of us who are supportive of medicine and science and the traditions that the FDA has advanced. That mifepristone itself could remain available, while the very lawsuit that was brought before the judge filed against the FDA could proceed through the courts. In particular, very significantly, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals blocked a series of steps packaged inside this lawsuit that the FDA took in recent years, basically to ease access to the drug. Those access easing events and steps included allowing the drug to be sent through the mail, through the postal service, and also allowing it to be prescribed by healthcare providers who are not medical doctors. Those two things were the principal things that the FDA had done recently to try to ensure that mifepristone people can get access to it on a regular basis. And in this opinion of just a few days ago, the Fifth Circuit, while again it said that the drug itself could remain available, decided to support the decision of the lower court, finding that those particular steps that the FDA took in recent years to make the drug more accessible, those would have to go. Those would not be a part of their affirmation going forward. And so what happens, of course, is that that's the decision by the appeals court, kind of a split decision, if you will. Certainly good to affirm the general legality of the pill, but basically returning on its head the access issues that were also part of this lawsuit. And so what happens once again, according to the attorney general, he announces, as does the president of the United States of America, Joe Biden says, we're not going to stand silent in the wake of the Texas decision, in the wake of the Fifth Circuit decision. We're going to appeal all of this where? To the United States Supreme Court, which is exactly where you go when you are appealing a decision of an appeals court. And indeed, just Friday afternoon, late in the day, the Supreme Court paused all of this developing legal battle in the district courts and the appellate courts over this abortion pill, mifepristone, specifically Justice Alito, who interestingly was the author of the Dobbs opinion back in June. He basically said, we're going to put all this on hold. We're going to stay any further action on this. It doesn't signal which way the court is going to go with respect to the issues raised at the trial court level and also at the appellate court level, but basically says everything will stay in place so that these temporary restrictions that abortion rights advocates are talking about here, that all of those still will continue to go forward in the way that the world had before the decisions. In other words, the specific steps were the focus of the appeals court decision. Those will not be overturned. However, the justices indicated that the parties to this lawsuit on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week will be obliged to file briefs with them. Written arguments to the Supreme Court about what should happen here. Who should win? Should the Fifth Circuit's opinion be upheld in whole or in part? Should it be returned in some way for more development? We don't know exactly how the court will review and rule on all of this. It could, of course, restore full access to the pill. It could endorse the restrictions outlined by the appeals court, again, supported by that appellate court decision, or suspend access entirely as the judge did at the lower court level. And then, of course, the appeal will proceed, probably return to the justices for more matters down the road. All of that happening in the context of privacy rights in America, significant as this issue continues to be debated. When we come back, more important issues and events in the life and livelihood of our nation here on Morning Cannolis.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. okay? The pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
It's game day at Jim's house, and the spread is impressive.
Mike's already done some damage with the hot wings, and now he's dropping back and going deep for another slice of pizza.
I sure hope he brought the Pepto.
Mike knows the Pepto-Bismol provides fast, five-symptom relief from unexpected stomach upsets. He's no rookie.
The way he's throwing back those nachos, he's the GOAT.
Be ready for game day with Pepto-Bismol.
When you have nausea, heartburn, indigestion, upset stomach, diarrhea.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. High temperatures reach up to 61 this afternoon under overcast skies with scattered thunderstorms likely. West winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Overcast skies tonight, a mixture of precipitation likely, 30. Snow likely tomorrow, high of 37, overcast. About an inch of snow tonight through tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 48 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know.
And we are back. Thank you for once again joining me here on Morning Cannolis. My name is Jim Santel, and we're talking now about some of the major events in the area of law and justice and the promotion of rule of law in our nation. Big story breaking just this past week, and that is that the FBI has arrested a 21-year-old member of the Massachusetts Air National Guard. Did that on Thursday in connection with, allegedly, his leak of dozens of highly classified documents. And those documents, according to all reports, contain this array of national security secrets, information not in the public domain, including the focus on the breadth of the surveillance of the United States conducting surveillance of Russia, and also very centrally, issues and information related to the war in Ukraine. This past week, just these past couple of days, Airman First Class Jack Teixeira taken into custody to face charges of leaking these classified documents after federal authorities had witnessed that he had posted batches of this sensitive intelligence to an online gaming chat group. And as reporters, of course, descended upon this issue, finding more about this particular chat group, Attorney General Merrick Garland announced not only the arrest of this young man, but also indicated the focus of it. Said in a brief statement when he was announcing the arrest of Airman Teixeira that first he would be arraigned as he was this past week in federal district court in Massachusetts. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And Garland confirmed that he would be charged and has been charged in connection with the unauthorized removal, the retention and the transmission of classified national defense information, which is a reference, of course, to the Espionage Act, which is traditionally used to prosecute the mishandling and theft of sensitive intelligence. Again, Jack Teixeira brought into custody and brought before a federal district court magistrate just this past week to begin to answer to those charges. What happened during the course of that proceeding? Well, again, brought there because of the U.S. Attorney's Office there, the U.S. Attorney in particular, able to issue a criminal complaint describing, again, in skeletal terms, because this is not yet an indictment, but a criminal complaint that justifies the apprehension, the arrest of Mr. Teixeira, and justifies his continued detention. A little bit of argument about that during the course of the initial proceeding. The magistrate deciding
to schedule further proceedings on the issue of detention, on the issue of custody, whether or not Mr. Teixeira should be released. And the questions there, as always, are about whether or not he poses a risk of flight. He's going to flee. Or, and both of those things, whether he might also pose a risk to the safety and security of the community. And so that issue deferred while that happens, while the decision is not yet made about that. That will be the subject of next Wednesday's proceeding. Mr. Teixeira remains in federal custody, again charged under this criminal complaint process that U.S. attorneys do have the option to make. At some point, as we all know well, a federal grand jury has got to take a look at the information that is assembled by the government, presented there by U.S. attorneys and by assistant U.S. attorneys, and make a decision about whether or not there is probable cause to indict him on a series of charges. We can anticipate that that will probably happen sometime relatively soon, maybe or maybe not before next Wednesday's appearance on this detention and custody issue. But again, significant for a number of different reasons. Why? Well, we know that Teixeira was trained, according to the initial information, as a cyber transport systems specialist. And that's apparently a job that could entail a variety of duties, like keeping the unit's communications networks running. He was assigned, apparently, to the 102nd Intelligence Wing at the Otis Air National Guard Base, which is part of Joint Base Cape Cod. And that, according to the Air Force, that, again, is describing who he was, what kinds of things he did in his role as a member of our military. The 102nd Intelligence Wing's official Facebook page congratulated Teixeira and colleagues on their promotion to Airman First Class as soon as recently as last July. Now, officials would not respond to specific questions about what the airman's duties were and specifically what he was doing, how he has access to slides about the Ukraine war, much less the daily deluge of intelligence reports from our intelligence units like the CIA and the National Security Agency, the Office of National Intelligence. All of those are units at the base that process intelligence collected from drones and U-2 spy planes, all of them agencies that bring together information that Airman Teixeira plainly had access to. So why is all that important? Why am I telling you all of that information that we know so far, even though we don't have great depth and great visibility into every last thing that he did? Well, plainly, couple of important things. Undeniably, according to the Secretary of Defense, there's going to be a review now of the protocols and practices for people in positions like this. But significantly, a spokesman for the Defense Department said yesterday, you know, we already do have many, many protocols in place. Let us make clear, he said, that while those protocols are in place, and they do in fact require the observance by everyone who's employed, everyone who takes the oath of office, everyone required to follow up on those particular protocols, the spokesman made it very clear that this is over and above that. This is apart from that, shockingly and horrifically. Why? Because it's a criminal act. That just because the protocols are there does not prevent people, if they choose to engage in crime, from overcoming and disregarding those protocols. And that's what happened here, at least according to the Pentagon authority. A significant notion when we think about the manner and mechanism by which people engage in criminal conduct. We've got lots of rules and regulations out there, including for classified information, military intelligence. If one decides to purposely, intentionally, knowingly evade those rules and engage in criminal acts, that's when the Justice Department becomes involved. Again, the FBI, certainly military authorities, also a part of this investigation, certainly still being put together for that time relatively soon when this entire package of information will be presented to a grand jury for its review and its analysis in the days just ahead. At that time, the grand jury once again determining whether there is probable cause to indict the airman for specific offenses, again, presumably under the Espionage Act that makes this the unauthorized removal and retention and transmission of classified documents a crime. They'll be looking at all of that, again, upon presentations of evidence and returning into the public domain an indictment alleging with great specificity what he did and presumably how he did it. Could very well be a talking indictment. Could be an indictment that describes in great detail exactly what he did. We know as well that as a part of the investigation, because a lot of the reporters have confirmed this, there was somebody else on this website with him on this exchange that he was engaging in, this trail that he left behind among the group's members, who had sort of bonded apparently during the isolation of the pandemic. One of them indicated that he knew that the leader of this was posting this information. It's through that person on this chat group that the authorities eventually found Teixeira and identified him as the person who placed all of this online. We'll talk more about this as the story develops in the days and weeks ahead. Stay with us for the second hour this morning on Morning Cannolis as we get back to more issues related to the civil and criminal litigation in these United States of America.
Very strange, any lane is in my ear and in my eye. There beneath the blue suburban skies, I sit and meanwhile by me. Any lane is in my ear and in my eye.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Home ownership is a big deal, and so is taking the leap into the buying or selling of any property. The Weichert team gets...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.